You are Locked On Seahawks, your daily Seattle Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Greetings, 12. This is Corbin Smith, your host for Locked On Seahawks. Joining me for our Tuesday episode, my co-host in crime, Rob Rang. A busy day around the NFL, including the league adopting a new 17-game regular season schedule for the 2021 season. We'll break down how that impacts the Seahawks and the rest of the NFC West and much more later on our show. Now for your lead story here on Locked On Seahawks, along with joining a perennial contender, Gabe Jackson has yet another reason to be happy to team up with Russell Wilson and company in Seattle. The Seahawks granting him a new three-year contract. They tore up the two-year deal that they inherited from his previous contract with the Raiders, and it's a new three-year deal worth up to $22.6 million. Rob, we expected there was going to be some type of a restructure involved with Jackson coming to Seattle because his salary cap hit for 2021 would have been $9.6 million. But again, Matt Thomas, one of the most important pieces of Seattle's front office, he has done it again. And with this new contract, more than $7 million in additional guarantees going to Gabe Jackson, but his salary cap hit is now going to be less than $5 million for this season. Again, it's a win-win for the organization and the player who's now going to get more guaranteed money over the next 3 years to play for a team that has consistently been in the playoffs.
Yeah, as you said, Corbin, it really is a win-win. And I love that you mentioned Matt Thomas. He doesn't get enough credit for all of the squeezing that has to happen this time of year to get teams under the salary cap. He truly is a salary cap specialist, does a great job for the Seahawks. And you know, you kind of talked about it. For a player like Gabe Jackson to go from a club like the Raiders, who it seems like every year they've got some talent, they just don't actually get into the playoffs, or even when they do, they don't go very far. I think that this is a great opportunity for him. Obviously, he is going to be protecting for quarterback and Russell Wilson, who is just that much more talented than anybody that Jackson has blocked for in the past. And then to be able to not only bring him in for the cheap price of a fifth round selection, obviously, again, very cheap for a Pro Bowl guard and a position of huge concern for the Seahawks. But as you just mentioned, with the contract being tore up in the past, having a new three-year deal with the Seahawks, then it not only protects the player, gives them a heck of a bump, and also protects the team as far as the guarantees, and so he drops the salary cap, cost down a little bit more. But also, what a sign of respect for Gabe Jackson. And then I would think that if I was a free agent out there and I saw the way that Seattle just treated Gabe Jackson and what they're trying to build here, then to me that would be encouraging as well. And so I think all of those different factors are all very much in play here. And again, kudos to the Seahawks. They are figuring out how they're going to be able to create a legitimate team that might be able to compete for the division title yet again while still having the huge burden of the salary cap that they have with two players getting so much of their dollars in Russell Wilson and Bobby Wagner. It'd be really complicated to be able to create that. The Seahawks appear to be doing a great job of doing exactly that, though.
Yeah, it was funny because Jackson had his first opportunity to speak with Seattle media today, and he was asked about whether there was any restructures or extensions or anything as part of the trade, and he just said there was a little extension that was made. It's clearly more than a little extension. I guess little is a relative term. Maybe for an NFL player, it was not that big of a deal, but that's a pretty big spike. $7 million more in guaranteed money, a $9 million signing bonus. It's a win-win, like I said, for both the team and the player. And I think the other big winner here is Russell Wilson, and Seahawks fans maybe should be included in this as well, because we've seen the storylines over the last month and a half. There was all the trade murmurs. Is Russell Wilson going to be with the Seahawks in 2021? Is Wilson going to be happy again in Seattle? Can the Seahawks mend this relationship? And I think it's really encouraging that Gabe Jackson has already talked to Russell Wilson. He says that Wilson's excited about him arriving in Seattle. He did joke around a little bit and said, maybe not as excited as I am. And some fans took that the wrong way. He was smiling while he said that. It was not a shot at Russell Wilson, but they are really excited to work together. And with that investment that the Seahawks are making here, giving him a new three-year contract, as you mentioned, that looks really good to free agents on the outside. But I think that's got to look really good to Russell Wilson, because the organization isn't just making a quick fix here on their offensive line. They're not buying a rental. They just committed through 2023 to have Gabe Jackson on that front line. And they're saying, we are going to put the money into pass protection so that we can keep you happy and keep you protected. So I think it's a really big deal when you consider that relationship and the fact that he talked about already talking to Dwayne Brown, Damian Lewis. Whether this offensive line's under a microscope, he downplayed that idea that if they do what they need to do, they put the work in, this offensive line has a chance to be great. Again, it was the type of press conference you can expect with a player joining a new team. He's excited about the opportunity, but I do think there were some really good things that came from this presser, most notably that relationship already developing between Jackson and Russell Wilson, which should put fans more at ease moving forward.
Yeah, I 100% agree. I think that's absolutely critical. We talked about what can the Seahawks do to try to, you know, put over that branch of peace in Russell Wilson's corner. I think this is exactly what you do. We talked about this before, that Russell Wilson was so eager to try to get some more help, whether that be blockers, whether it be pass catchers, whatever the case might be. But I think that by John Schneider essentially just saying, okay, this is one of the guys that we believe that can help you out. They made the big move to acquire him. You've seen the way Russell Wilson, I think, retweeted your post about his excitement about bringing in Gabe Jackson. I think that's exactly the type of thing the Seahawks needed to do. They needed to be able to reach out publicly, if necessary, to reach out and mend those fences with your quarterback. I think that Russell Wilson's got to be ecstatic that they have one, I would argue, is the best guard that was available. I know there's other people out there like Joe Tooney and some of the other players that were available. To me, Gabe Jackson was one of the real fits for Seattle's current offense, for just the size, the physicality of the player. Because, again, I'm always looking from a personnel standpoint. Who is the type of guard, has the size, has the physicality, has the durability, has the nastiness? Who is that guard that is going to fit up against Aaron Donald the best? And so some of the players that I saw get massive deals in free agency, I didn't necessarily think would project as well against a player like Aaron Donald. I really think that Gabe Jackson can be that guy. So, yeah, I think that Russell Wilson's excited. I think that Chris Carson is excited. Mm-hmm. I think that Seahawks fans, as you mentioned, should be excited, because this is the step Seattle needed to fortify that offensive line.
And you mentioned the interest. We know that Kevin Zeitler and Joe Tooney were two players that the Seahawks at least expressed interest in. We know that a significant offer was given to Zeitler that was in the same ballpark as the contract that Gabe Jackson just signed. It was in that three-year, $22 million window, and the Ravens offered just a little bit more money, and Zeitler wanted to stay in the AFC North, where he's already played for the Browns and the Bengals. So that one didn't work out for Seattle, but ultimately, they end up getting a really good player in Gabe Jackson. And I know they only had four draft picks. Now they have three as a result. But giving up a fifth-round pick for a player like Jackson that has started 100 games in his career, he's played both guard positions, he's willing to play either spot. They haven't told him yet where he's going to be lined up. I would still hedge bets he's going to be playing left guard for the Seahawks. But to be able to bring in a player of that caliber for a fifth-round pick and turn around and sign him to a team-friendly extension like this. He's not super old either. It's not like this is a 34, 35-year-old lineman. He's 29 going on 30. So he should still have a lot of really good football left in him, and they get him for a pretty good price point that's going to have him locked up through 2023. Again, it's a win for the player, for the Seahawks, and most importantly, it's a win for Russell Wilson, who gets his pass protection upgraded both short-term and long-term with this investment made by general manager John Schneider and the rest of the Seahawks front office. When we come back in the second quarter, big news in the NFL today. They've officially opted for a 17-game season in 2021. We've known this time was coming. How's it going to impact the Seahawks and the rest of the NFC West? Moving forward, we'll break down next year's schedule and what to expect with the first schedule change in 43 years. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. We have been telling you about Built Bar, the best tasting protein bar on the market for a while now. Built Bar is the amazing low calorie, low sugar, high protein, high fiber, amazing tasting protein bar with 100% chocolate on all bars. Now is the time to find out which Built Bar is the best. It is Built Bar Madness. Today's matchup is cookies and cream versus cookie dough chunk. Two Goliaths in the Built Bar world going up against each other here in the final four. Go to BuiltBar.com or to @bar_built on Twitter to cast your vote. Remember to use the promo code LOCKED15 to get 15% off your next order. That is LOCKED15 to get 15% off your next order at BuiltBar.com. And check back to see who won today's matchup and who will become the best tasting protein bar. Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, Tuesday edition. I'm your host, Corbin Smith, joined as always by Rob Rang. We're covering everything you need to know about the Seahawks, but what about the rest of sports? Now the Locked On Podcast Network has you covered there as well with Locked On Today. It's hosted by the great Peter Bukowski, and it's all the sports news you need every morning in under 20 minutes. Subscribe to the Locked On Today podcast wherever you get podcasts. As expected, the NFL is moving forward with the plan to expand the regular season schedule from 16 games to 17 games in 2021. This has been anticipated for a while. It was a big part of the negotiation process in last year's newly ratified CBA. Players gave up the concession of having a 17th game by getting a larger part of the revenue share, more benefits, and a number of other things. There was a trade-off on both sides. Some players don't think that it necessarily was a fair trade-off, but ultimately, players want to play football. They ratified the new CBA, and now with the owners checking it off, we can expect one extra game on the schedule each year for the Seahawks. And I guess, you know, you look at the positives, Rob, it's never a bad thing to have more football, but I like the traditional 16-game schedule because I felt like it was perfect when you had four team divisions. You could match up. The schedule just set up perfectly. Now you have this extra game, and we no longer can have 8-8 records either, which I don't know if that's a positive or not, but if Jeff Fisher was still coaching, he'd be extremely concerned about that. But nonetheless, we're going to get an extra game of football, whether the players wanted it truly or not. That was a concession they made, and that means that the Seahawks will get to play the Pittsburgh Steelers in 2021.
Yeah, which is exciting in itself. I think the Pittsburgh Steelers, at least in my opinion, are one of the truly iconic franchises in all of the NFL. And so I'm excited about that. As you said, Corbin, and I think that really summarizes it. More football is always a good thing for people like us who, of course, enjoy the game as much as we do. I look at it from a personnel standpoint. I think that, unfortunately, anytime you extend a season, then there's a likelihood there's going to be more injuries. Right, I think that just makes sense. But at the same time, again, from a personnel standpoint, that potentially is more opportunities for young players who, as someone who really enjoys that, the evaluating of the young players, that whole NFL draft process, then I like that as well. The other thing I like, and maybe this is just because I've had too many hangovers on the Monday after a Super Bowl, okay? But I think that it's always made sense if the Super Bowl was played part of a three-day weekend. And by adding just one game, then now it sets up with the playoffs potentially. Last year, the playoffs, the Super Bowl was, I believe, February 7th. So obviously Super Bowl Sunday, February 7th. 1 week after that is the annual President's Day holiday. And so I think that the NFL has been kind of thinking about this for a long time now. If they could just push their season one more week during the regular season, then you have your playoffs just like you had. Then you have your three-day President's Day weekend just screams with the royalty and the regalia and all that that is the NFL and the Super Bowl. And then you also have that Monday off that for a lot of people, you know, who party a little bit too much or travel for the Super Bowl or whatever, you know, the NFL is looking at this from the bottom line standpoint. They love the idea of another game because that's another opportunity to make money off of TV, make money off of fans and sit in the stadiums, all of those things. But I promise you a big part of this, again, is the idea of the President's Day weekend and being able to have that Monday off so not quite as many people call in sick on what in this country at least has been the most called in sick day all year long. So kudos to the sea, or kudos to the NFL and trying to figure out a way of doing this while still keeping the players happy, as you mentioned. But I think that this has been something that very much has been in the works for years now. And I'm excited to see where it goes, because as you said, Corbin, again, more football is always better.
And that was a point of view that I had not thought about. And maybe it's because I have never been hungover in my life. But the idea that you have a 3-day weekend and you're using President's Day weekend to have the Super Bowl, I do think that there's a lot of merit to that. It makes a lot of sense. And so if that was a big part of this idea, then kudos to the NFL, because you can use that as a reasonable excuse to add this additional game. I know from a player's standpoint, and being somebody that has played a lot of football, I can only imagine how much more this is going to impact players, though, having that extra game and not having an additional bye. One of the arguments that I made for a long time, because this is not a new development. This has been something that's been talked about for a long time, adding a 17th game. There was even discussion about just moving it to 18, which I thought was preposterous, adding two games at one time. That's an incredible leap in a physical sport like football, but this has been a talking point for a long time, and players have been against it mainly because of the health issues that are presented by football. An extra game of football is extremely taxing on a player. You could be talking about potentially cutting down the length of a player's career by adding a game. So I've long argued that you should have a second bye. The players were not able to get that, but still, they're going to get more financial gain from this. They're going to get more benefits from the NFL. There are a lot of positives that are going to be coming back to the players as agreed upon as part of this deal in the new CBA. And so it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out. And from a football standpoint, as you mentioned, the Steelers and Seahawks, the last two times these teams have played have been thrillers. They played that game in 2015 at then called CenturyLink Field. It was one of the best regular season games that I've ever watched, just back and forth. And then Doug Baldwin has that game-clinching touchdown at the end of regulation. And then a couple years ago, they played in Pittsburgh, and the Seahawks held on for a two-point win. So these teams typically are very competitive, a battle of division winners from a year ago. And I think maybe that's the one thing to consider here. If you really take strength of schedule as being an important metric, which I'm hit and miss on it because teams change so much from year to year. But when you're a division champion, you have to play the first place teams in the out-of-division games. And so they're going to have to play the first-place team, the Steelers, from the AFC North as part of their schedule now. The 49ers get to play a road game against the Bengals, who might be much better. Joe Burrow is going to be back from his injury, and they've got another high draft pick. Maybe they'll be more competitive, but that's going to be an easier game for the 49ers. The Cardinals, they play the Browns, which they made the playoffs last year. And then the Ravens, they made the playoffs as well. They're hosting the Rams. So really, the only team there that gets an easy game, and I don't know that the Bengals will be an easy game. The AFC North is a very good division, and so this is going to impact all the NFC West teams, not just one or two in particular. There's a chance that they could go 2-2, 1-3 in these games. And so it might end up costing one of those teams in arguably the toughest division in the NFL a playoff spot. We'll just have to wait and see. But it does add a lot of intrigue with that being the division that the Seahawks draw. And all those teams are going to be playing on the road. And this is the one thing I really like, because a question that I had going into this process, Rob, was, how are they going to handle having an extra game that's now going to make it an odd number of games? You're going to have teams that play 9 road games versus 8 home games. How can you make that as fair as possible? Well, the league has said, well, we'll just have the entire NFC play an extra road game in 2021, and then the AFC will have a road game in 2022. That seems like the fairest way to do this, because when you're looking at tiebreakers, a lot of times they're based off of conference results. So you don't want to give some teams an unfair advantage by getting an extra home game. I think this is probably the best way that they could do this in a system that wasn't going to have a perfect solution.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's the simplest way of doing it. It's the fairest way. And the simplicity angle is something that kind of brings me back to the one thing that I think is a negative about the change of schedule. We already talked about the obvious negative. Again, it's just that much more taxing on the players' bodies. The other negative, of course, is, again, if you are a football historian and you like to be able to compare the statistics, then obviously now with the 17-game season, then we should see lots of players wind up having more rushing yards or more touchdowns or more tackles or whatever the case might be, but you're not going to be able to have that easy comparison before to previous seasons. But at the same time, again, as we talked about, more football is always better. I really like the matchup with the Seahawks versus the Steelers just for the history of it. Obviously, with Seattle's very first Super Bowl appearance was against Pittsburgh, so there's all of those kind of angles. And then, as you mentioned, Corbo, just the quality of the AFC North division. That's good football, not just football in general, but, you know, all of the teams in the NFC West who we've argued, you know, at least this past year was, if not the best division of football, then certainly among them. I think one of the biggest, you know, contenders for that would have been the AFC North. So again, it's going to be high quality football against elite competition. So I'm excited to see not only the Seahawks versus the Steelers, but all those other intra-conference matchups that we're going to be seeing between the AFC, the NFC West and the AFC North.
A couple other details that came out of the owners' meeting today relating to the schedule. Every team is now going to be required to play one international game every 8 years. So Seahawks fans that are in London, Mexico City, or even Germany, that is a new site that looks like is going to be hosting games here in the near future as part of the international series. If you're a fan of one of those three locations, you've got a good chance to be able to see the Seahawks in the near future. So international fans will be excited about that once we get past this COVID-19 pandemic. And they're going to be keeping the 14-game playoff system that they tried out last year with 6 wild card games and just one bye in each conference. I'm still not a huge fan of that, but again, more football, more money. So it's understandable why the NFL is going to go with that larger wild card weekend opportunity that he took advantage of back in January for the first time. We'll just have to see all this plays out. But again, more football. When you're looking at the positive and negatives here, ultimately that outweighs everything. We get another game that we get to watch and analyze. And so that's good news for everyone. When we come back in the third quarter, continuing our draft coverage, we're going to be looking at the running back position. They brought back Chris Carson, but the Seahawks have always been willing to add another running back to the fold. In fact, they've picked a running back in 4 consecutive drafts. Could they make it 5? We're going to look at several prospects that would be good fits for the Seahawks in the 2nd, 4th, and 7th round. When we return, you're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. Football might be over, but the NBA, college basketball, and NHL are in full swing. BetOnline even covers awards, TV shows, and reality TV. Real-time updated odds and props on almost anything you can imagine. BetOnline has you covered for all the news, scores, and odds. It's the best way to place your bets, and it's free to sign up. Head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, Tuesday edition. I'm your host, Corbin Smith, joined by Rob Rang. The NFL draft is weeks away. It's time to start following our Locked On NFL draft duo. The Draft Dudes podcast watches every prospect so that you don't have to. And the Locked On NFL Draft podcast is your daily draft news and mock draft podcast. Follow Locked On NFL Draft and Draft Dudes on the radio.com app or wherever you get podcasts. The Seahawks brought back Chris Carson recently, so that has kind of begged the question, will the Seahawks actually have any reason to draft a running back? But if you look at the history under John Schneider and Pete Carroll, that has been a position where nearly every season it feels like the Seahawks have selected at least one running back. They've picked a back in each of the past 4 drafts. They picked Carson in 2017, used a first rounder on Rashad Penny in 2018, Travis Homer as a 6th rounder 2019, and then last year DJ Dallas in the 4th round. So the Seahawks have consistently prioritized that position in the draft. So even with Chris Carson, Rashad Penny coming back, Alex Collins being re-signed, still having a Homer and Dallas on the roster, you can never count John Schneider out adding picks and trying to bring in another running back to the fold. So keeping that in mind, let's break down the running back position as we've done with a few other position groups thus far. Rob, you and I are going to identify 3 players, one that's a 2nd-round potential pick, one that's a 4th-rounder, and one that's a 7th-rounder, one for each of Seattle's 3 picks. And we're going to break down each of these running backs' games, why they would be a decent fit for the Seahawks. So let's start in the 2nd round. It seems really bold to proclaim that the Seahawks would use a 2nd-round pick with only 3 selections right now on a running back, given the depth they had. But if John Schneider wants to throw the ultimate curveball, who are you taking with that second round pick in the backfield?
Well, here's the thing, Corbin. As we talked about, Seattle's running back depth chart is already stacked. So let's just say this right off the bat. I believe that you feel this way as well, that it's very unlikely that Seattle would take a running back in this draft class, only having the three selections at this point. And the idea of them taking one in the second round just seems that much more kind of crazy. There are three running backs who I believe that Seattle would consider at pick number 56, where they currently draft right now. The Alabama running back Najee Harris, the North Carolina running back Javonte Williams, and then the back that I'm going to list here, Travis Etienne from Clemson. I just think that the Etienne gives you a little bit more of that straight line speed that you believe that Rashad Penny possesses, or at least at one time he did prior to the ACL injury. That's one of the concerns that Seattle's has to have. You want a back who is going to be able to truly complement the bulldozing kind of a style that Chris Carson has. Travis Etienne was not a back that was known for his hands out of the backfield earlier in his career. And that's one of the reasons why he returned this past season. It was a real shocker that he decided to return because he was viewed as a first or second round selection a year ago. Decided to return. He's going to wind up being drafted about the same spot this year, but he is a significantly improved receiver out of the backfield. And so because of all of those different factors, because of his durability, because of his consistency, that I do think that if Travis Etienne was available to them, and he is the third back, in my opinion, to come off the board, the only one of the three, I think, who realistically has a shot at being there at Seattle's pick, again, currently number 56 overall, if he was on the board, I think that he would be among the better players available. And so therefore, he would make some sense for the Seahawks.
Yeah, I don't really see Etienne falling to 56. And I don't really see Harris or Javonte Williams doing so either. And those are really the only three running backs that I could justify picking that early, especially with Seattle's depth. Now, I'm a big fan of Javonte Williams. I see a little bit of Marshawn Lynch in his game, 220-pound bowling ball that loves contact, loves getting downhill. And really the thing that stands out to me in his game that I see similarities to Marshawn Lynch is not going beast mode and trucking guys left and right and throwing people 5 miles with stiff arms. You don't necessarily see similarities there. Marshawn Lynch is a unique creature in that regard. But the vision in traffic, that is such an underrated aspect of great running backs. And Marshawn Lynch is one of the best I've ever seen at that. And that's one of the reasons he was so good running between the tackles. I see a lot of that in Williams' game. He's got excellent vision when he's in traffic, and that allows him to find tight creases and pick up yardage. He's improved as a receiver. He's a guy that had over 300 receiving yards and 3 touchdowns for North Carolina last season out of the backfield. So this is a player that gives you a lot of flexibility, catching the football out of the backfield, running hard between the tackles. Not a burner, ran in the 4.5s at his pro day for North Carolina, but you don't need to be a 4.3 guy to be an outstanding running back in the NFL, particularly if you're a punisher like Williams is. So you look at the style the Seahawks prefer. He would be the running back there at pick 56 if he's available. That Pete Carroll might be pulling on John Schneider's jacket a little bit, saying, please pick him, please pick him. I think otherwise they're not going to be picking a running back there, though, with the depth that they have. A little bit more realistically going to day 3, if the Seahawks are going to pick a running back, not the best class depth-wise in the position, but still plenty of talent that should be available in the 4th round for the Seahawks to choose from.
Oh, absolutely there is. That's really where I think that this running back class is actually has some really nice depth on day 3. So, I don't think that it's likely that Seattle is going to take a running back this year, just because I don't necessarily believe that John Schneider is going to be able to successfully parlay his current 3 picks into the 8, 9, 10 selections that the Seahawks have always had. But at the same time, there is absolutely some very talented running backs who I expect to be drafted on day three who are going to wind up having some success in the NFL, perhaps even as future superstars. We saw that a year ago with one of the best running backs a year ago as a rookie was James Robinson, who went undrafted for the Jacksonville Jaguars and then wound up setting all kinds of records. It was just a terrific player. So it's kind of with that mentality, that kind of train of thought, that I'm going to mention a back that actually is the former teammate of the back that you just mentioned, Javonte Williams. And so I'm going to focus in on Michael Carter from North Carolina. So North Carolina had two of the absolute elite running backs in all of college football a year ago. With Javonte Williams, the back that you were talking about before, Corbin, I could not agree with you more. I think that he's an absolute stud. He is my favorite back all around in this draft class. Now, I personally have Najee Harris ranked a little bit higher because he's just a different caliber of athlete. But in terms of a guy who just plays a Seahawks style of football, I think that your selection of Javonte Williams absolutely hits the bullseye. That said, again, I don't necessarily think that he's going to be available at number 56. And Michael Carter is the better receiver, the even speedier of the two of them. And so, again, I think that when you look at what the Seahawks currently have on their roster, you know that Chris Carson's going to get the rock a lot. You know that they believe in Rashad Penny as well. They brought back Alex Collins. You have some bigger backs on your team. I mean, if you look at all those three backs we just mentioned, you're averaging roughly 5'10", 220, 225 pounds, right? So, and DJ Dallas, 5'10", 218, I believe. Okay, so all of those guys are kind of the similar build. Travis Homer is the one back on Seattle's roster. He's a little bit of a different guy. He's 5'10", 200 pounds, right? That's very similar to Michael Carter, 5'9", 199 pounds, but this is a 4'4 guy all day long. He's got great lateral agility, quickness, catches the ball well, and then has that explosive straight line speed that I mentioned previously with Travis Etienne as well. So again, to me, he is another back that would kind of fit in as that change of a pace guy. I think the Seattle already has that guy in Travis Homer, as I mentioned before, but if they wanted some competition for that specific role, then Michael Carter from North Carolina would make a lot of sense in the fourth round.
And see, I'm thinking more along the lines, Chris Carson, Rashad Penny have injury histories. I want to make sure that I have another battering ram. And maybe Alex Collins is that guy for you. There's a reason they brought him back. And he looked good in his limited action last season. But Trey Sermon from Ohio State, I've mentioned him several times previously on our podcast. He has durability question marks himself. So that's really the one red flag that I have in his game. He hasn't been overly productive catching the football out of the backfield. I don't think it's because he's not capable, though. That's just not been something that he's had a lot of opportunities to do when he was at Oklahoma or Ohio State to finish off his college career. But he's got a bit more home run hitting potential than what Javonte Williams does, a guy that when he gets to that second level, he can kick it up another notch, another gear, and he can go the distance. And we've seen that in his two previous stops at the college level. He's around 215 pounds. So, again, he's in that build, that body type the Seahawks prefer at running back. He's got great contact balance, not necessarily a trucking running back that's going to just bulldoze people, but breaks a lot of tackles, is a guy that bounces off of defenders. And so I think he, again, is another back that really fits with the Seahawks like. He has ideal quickness, and he's really good at holding onto the football. Great ball security, which you know Pete Carroll values that as well. So, again, if the Seahawks were going to pick this early at the running back position, I'll be surprised if they do that. But Trey Sermon is a player that with his physical talents and the fact that he hasn't gotten a lot of wear and tear in his college career, he's never had a season with more than 200 carries. He's going to be a guy that might be able to give you a real lift out of the backfield that's got fresh legs. I could see him being good value in the fourth round. But realistically, if the Seahawks are going to pick a running back, I think you and I would both agree, it's going to be with them adding several late-round picks by trading down. And if they have multiple seventh-round picks, that may be where they take a shot on a running back that can compete for a roster spot and maybe be a player that you could slip onto the practice squad.
Yeah, exactly. That just makes so much more sense. I think so. That's where I think that there is a chance that Seattle would take another running back, but I would expect him to be in the later rounds or again undrafted free agency. And there are a number of backs in this class that makes some sense. I love that you mentioned Trey Sermon. He's another one of my favorite backs in this class. Plays a Seahawks brand of football. You're right, Corbin. We have talked about him many times in the past on the show. But again, I would reiterate that I think that he would be a terrific fit for Seattle. He actually had his pro day workout today. You mentioned the fact that he was not very productive as a receiver out of the backfield. Well, he just didn't get very many opportunities. You think about playing at Oklahoma and all the weapons that they've had, coming to Ohio State, all the weapons that they have, as well as the quarterbacks that they have. He just didn't get that many opportunities. So I watched very closely how Sermon did in his pro day workout today in terms of catching passes out of the backfield from Justin Fields. And both he and Fields, by the way, had terrific workouts.